Blog Talk Radio.
Hey parents, say hello to instant style with Fashion On. Just spray and look cool in an instant.
What about my bifocals?
Hey,
I can't see.
But your kids can see you, and trust me, they see fashion. Fashion On is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for waking up this morning. I hope you all had a wonderful week. I know I did. We have beautiful weather here in Philadelphia. And today we're going to be talking to an icon that has spanned several generations with her beauty, intelligence. Her acting has just astounded us through Coffee, Jackie Brown. Now she's recently in Just Right. It's the foxy and fabulous Pam Grier. Donatello took off like he had a kick from Satan himself with me on him. Four other horses joined the runaway parade, and while I tried to get him to stop, the crew members became hysterical, screaming curses and commands of Donatello in Italian at the top of their lungs. Stop screaming, I begged them. Keep your voices down. Horses are flight animals, and the pop on the flank gave Donatello a message that he was being attacked by a predator. But no one could hear me, and even if they could, it was too late. As an overzealous crew member rushed in front of us, waving a colored banner at the horse. Get out of the way, I yelled. Stop waving that thing in front of him or you'll kill him. In the next few minutes, everyone who was trying to help me made every mistake in the book. But even if they had known the right thing to do, it probably wouldn't have mattered because Donatello was fast and young. The only thing I could do was try to stay on him until I wore his energy down. I figured if I ran him at full gallop for about 5 minutes, he would have slowed down. Well, this is from her new book, Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. And it's a wonderful book. You should pick it up. She wrote it with Andrea Kagan. And many of you may not know, but she was raised around horses and loved farming and the animals. And she has also had a love for dogs and things of that nature. So she is a very sensitive spirit. She's also very disciplined. Many of you may not know that she was reading Stanislavski, maybe when you didn't know she was reading Stanislavski, but she definitely is disciplined in her career. And another word that came to mind was a sense of freedom. She is so free and looking to express all her different sides of herself. I believe this might be her. Hold on a second. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for calling in today.
It's Pam.
Yes, I appreciate you calling in. I just want to say I'm a huge fan of yours.
Well, thank you. I am now a fan of yours from listening.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime, anytime. I just want to say your book was a wonderful insight to you. I just learned so much about you. And one of the things I just mentioned was your humility. You are so unassuming about the wonderful, vast talent that you have.
Well, I think I focus on developing my talents, my curiosity of the world, my caring for the world, you know, moving into, and I have been, just in embracing the green movement, but also I'm still socially conscious for, you know, animal shelters, for, you know, the people who've lost their homes, and the new awareness that our president, our executive officer, he was put into office by a very strong pop culture, but he's also raised the bar. He's moved us from this very lethargic, anemic state of mind for the past 15 years. And he's moved us to a level of, you know, like he says, I need your help. You need to communicate.
Yeah.
Read. reinvent yourself, investigate, examine, listen well. And that has been a state of mind for a majority of our citizens in this country, and they realize it now, that they're so behind and they've felt unappreciated, and they know that they have given over their power to an administrative office in the last 8 years that literally bamboozled them.
Bamboozled is the correct word, definitely.
And you know that, and everyone realizes that. They're not putting any blame, but awakening to it was our fault. It was the country, the very lax mental, you know, mental attitude of the country, and they're realizing that the rest of the world was moving upwards, and we were shrinking in leverage and power, where if you read Fareed Zakaria's book, The Post-American World, and you read about how China is number one, but still very leery because it's invested so much in us as we've invested in China.
Oh,
but
definitely. And the euro is worth more than our dollar.
Absolutely. Canada
has socialized medicine. You know?
Canada's now even. Well, they also have socialized medicine, but they also provide an education, a four-year college for their citizens called university, so that they can buy their master's degree and have a really well-educated infrastructure to make better voting decisions. And to when it comes to other countries, they save water, they use more solar, they use more wind power. They're so far advanced. And to know that Brazil is our equal now economically.
It's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous.
And that in Bangalore, which is the new Silicon Valley, that they had 70% of their PhDs move here instead of staying in India making $15,000 a year, which puts them in a high economic status. They would move here to make, you know, $80,000, $90,000. We don't have enough PhDs in this country
to do that, yeah.
To take those jobs to keep our country moving forward, and that you could see that happening, but no one questioned the motive of what was going on. Why isn't America producing enough PhDs to sustain our country? And when you read it, and you read about Wall Street has moved to London, that London is going to be the financial capital of the world, going to be probably is.
And then to know
that there are CEOs from Colorado corporations that have moved to London. That's a direct, indicative a message that there is a movement that is right. And then if you read Thomas L. Friedman's The World is Flat, that also validates all those things that are happening, and the world is flat, hot, and crowded. These are barometers. People have to read more, whether they take that book at home and use
it. Go to the library.
Keep our libraries open.
Yes.
You can't close libraries. There's supposed to be more people, and they're closing libraries in schools, but yet there's more people.
We had that problem here in Philadelphia. We had a huge problem here with the libraries closing because of finances. But I want to bring you to talking about you a little bit. I feel your passion about what's going on in our country. And one of the key things that you do talk about in your book is your struggle and your fight to try to get your education, your college education, and how you worked several jobs when you were younger, just trying to save money because that was so important to you. So that's a very important issue about education.
Right. And my mom, being a part of the women's movement, the women's liberation movement, and her day opened the doors for us to get that education for equanimity in community. And being barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen all the time would lead an imbalance in life. And the yin and yang of what I learned when I had cancer, my doctor sent me, you know, to embrace Eastern, you know, medicine, Eastern healing therapies, and realizing in life we need a balance, and that balance is a woman and a couple should have an education. So if something happens to the man and his employment, she can support the family, and the children see her being balanced. Because also I felt, and what I learned, and it's not a generalized observation, but what I learned is that men, yes, love to have the woman, love to be able to take care of the woman, love for her to be the adornment, the beauty, I'll take care of you. But then
you were all of those things. You were the beauty, you were taking care of men.
Men start to resent you. at some point. When they control the relationship, they control the money, you try to manage it and have children. And then having children wears you down and taking care of the house and doing things. So you're not as beautiful anymore. You're struggling, and you don't have, you can't work, and he's giving you money. When money gets tight and you ask for it, he resents you. Now there's physical abuse, there's verbal abuse, there's psychological abuse.
Yeah, he's stressed out. That's a huge burden for men. I did a show about
it. It is. They cannot carry that burden any longer.
Yeah.
That, maybe in the frontier days, but the frontier women that I grew up with in Wyoming and Colorado from my family, the women were able to take a job if they had to, but they also could hunt and they could fish and they could, you know, handle a chainsaw and cut firewood and they could
yes.
they could fix a hole in the roof, they cut the lawn. They had to do things that were not as feminine, but it was a part of saving the family.
But that's what made you a wonderful performer, because you did a lot of your own stunts, and you talk about that in your book, the strength of your upbringing, learning how to use a gun, taking care of the land, being close to the land, not being afraid. You just went out and did these stunts, and I just read a piece about you being in Italy on the horse and how it went wild because somebody smacked it in the back. I mean, that's part of the love that people have for you, is your strength and your power that you exude when you're on film.
Well, I do bring my sense of me in many of my roles to the craft, and that's why not just being urban or military, but I had the best of all three worlds to bring to my craft, to bring to, you know, to interest the audience, because you only have so much dialogue and story, and now you bring as an actor the elements of what you've learned and experienced to, you know, the roles, and you give subtext and you can add to the character and add to dialogue, if you will. And I had quite a bit of living, and people say, my God, your memoir. I said, well, you know, I've done some living, and
yes,
I was able to survive cancer, and many millions of people have not. But some live a little more than others. Does it make them more valuable, more important? But at the end of the day, it's what you learn from it and what you can share with all of that living with others.
Well, you shared a lot. You were so honest, brutally honest in your book. I was just amazed at the stories that you were telling. But very just straightforward, honest, no, you know, fluff or anything. But I want to read something here. This is in your book, and this was a January 1987. I think this was a great moment in your career. Pam Grier, Fool for Love. Congratulations. You are the recipient of the 19th Annual NAACP Image Award. How did you feel? People, you may not know, she also does stage and theater. And so she's very well-rounded. And earlier I also mentioned to them, an actor prepares. What do you think about when I say that, an actor prepares?
That it relates to a book that I had received to study my first, you know, film role. And it was written by Konstantin Stanislavski. And he said in the book, there's no such thing as a small role. That meant, you know, if it's a one-liner in a movie or television or stage or the entire piece, there's no such thing. The actor acts, the actor works, he prepares. And what I had done is I was offered my first role, which would take me away from, you know, film school, trying to get into film school, trying to become a resident of California, my five jobs in California
so
as a starving
jobs.
Student, three on the week, three during the week, and two on the weekends.
Yes.
And so I said to Roger Corman, who made this offer, which would take me away. I said, Roger, I will lose these other jobs. I cannot afford to be fired by you because I am a non-actor. I don't know how to act.
And he was surprised by that. You were like, I need my job when I come back, okay? This is
I would work for him, and I made sure I wouldn't be fired by him. And what I had done is that they considered, there in the film industry, there's an A movie and a B movie. And the A movies are the big stars of Broadway and the big box office star, big budgets. And the B movies are independents, you know, lesser known and some known, but the budgets aren't as big. So some actors would take that for granted and say, I don't need to learn my lines. It's a B movie. I can learn them that morning.
As opposed
to, you know, days and weeks of preparation and idea and thought and connection. And then what I said, well, Stanislavski said, I really need to know. This is a B movie, but to me, it's an A movie. This is what he told me. And when I read it, I realized and had such great respect for the actor. I said, who can do this? You know, and the Neighborhood Playhouse was built on the method, built on, and many of the actors that went there, whether it was Al Pacino and Gene Hackman, some of the greatest, the greats, when they did their work, it was such a, we love them because they were so authentic and so real. So
real,
I said, that's what I have to do, but this is, if I had known this, I wouldn't have committed to this dangerous movie with women in prison. Holy moly.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere in the Philippines.
In the Philippines, rice paddies with leeches and parasites.
Oh,
and all.
My God.
I'm like, you know what, Roger? This may kill me. But I said, but you know, it's tuition. If I can make this first film at 6 weeks at $500 a week, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be the student of Stanislavski. So I created I raised the bar, and I performed at such a level that my performance would be in the A stratus, where that he had preparation. And
oh, definitely, definitely.
So I raised it so much in my performance that no, when I was gonna slap you, I was gonna slap you.
And you hurt a couple times.
But as an actor, you're not to hurt the other actor, but I'm gonna have bring such reality to each scene that they said, oh my God, she's so good. So, and the dailies were coming back so strongly. Here's this, you know, raw, beautiful woman in these t-shirts and her wild hair, and she's so intense.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I was supposed to be.
Yeah,
and so
that's what you're supposed to be.
They gave me, before I finished, they said, we want you to stay and do another one. And it was another B movie, and I did it with such intensity that, again, they said, we want you to do another one.
You barely got out of there. You were leaving. When you left, you were in the plane. It was a monsoon or something.
Right. It was
going on.
We were about to
die.
Yeah. And so I left to come home and talk to my mom about this is what had happened. But, she said, well, you know, you still got to get an education. You got to have something to fall back on if you get hurt. Because my mom was coffee. She was always taking care of someone in the community. Someone was always in the kitchen. She was getting a splinter out their finger, pulling a tooth, patching a cut,
You were very close to your mom. And I think
that's all we had.
Relationship. Yeah.
That's all we had.
Important.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, our mothers and our grandmothers and great-grandmothers sacrificed so much. They didn't get the opportunity to get an education. There were quotas. You couldn't go to vet school. Women, period. There were so many doors closed to women. And my mom, my aunt was Foxy Brown, my mom was Coffee, highly intelligent. Couldn't get scholarships, couldn't get into schools, you know, unless you really searched and you had to move, maybe find a black university somewhere, you know, try to survive. It was so many obstacles for women.
Well, you talk in the book about going overseas when you were very young because your father was in the military and how you received such a wonderful education there, and also your experience dealing with the racial prejudice. You were embraced, and one of the things I thought was interesting, which I think is very important for young people, especially young African Americans, to read.
I hope they can read it. I hope we get the book to them, or even excerpts on the internet.
Yes, is that you had a friend who was they thought she was German, but I think she was Norwegian or something,
right.
And they were attacking her. So it was ethnic prejudice.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, the German Nazi, not Germany, Nazi invasion of Europe, and it devastated London. London had been bombed, and you could see the craters and the buildings. It was, you know, the post-war London, and the people were very, very sensitive, and often they would equate Nazism with Germany. When it was, it's totally secular, totally, all the Germans didn't support Nazism.
No, they didn't, no.
And she had a German last name. I think her father was German, her mom was Norwegian. And she was constantly being attacked and beaten up. And she was white. And she was my friend, and their family was loving and wonderful. And
new phenomena for you to see something like that.
And her name was Heidi, you know. And Heidi, I thought it was Swiss. But, you know, we didn't know much about Europe, or European, people who were French and Italian and German and, you know, and had their intermingling of their races and culture.
Exactly.
And I was learning that, of course I was learning about who were the Nazis? And Germany, what was, and I was trying to you know, I was quite young, but to figure, the adults were more understanding and knew what was going on than children. And I just didn't understand why they were beating her up, because she had a German name, and they would call her Nazi, and she wasn't a Nazi. That was a totally different political movement. It had anything to do with German culture, nothing. And she was just sometimes, and I would just stand up for her and try to stop the fights. And at the school, and everyone had an embracing of me and loved me for my physicality and my common sense and my warmth, and I would try to stop them. No, you know, just get her home. And it reminded me of being black in America and having, you know, being attacked by whites at the movie theater with my cousins one time, and to see, and only because we were standing in line all day, and then whites would get in front of us.
Just easily.
And take, and we're going, wait a minute, I'm sorry, you need to go to the end of the
back
line.
Back of the line, yeah.
Please, and they wouldn't. And it would start fights, and I could see, like, black on white was absolutely just frightening as it was. But then to see white on white in Europe was what?
Crazy.
As a young child.
We only have a couple minutes left. So I wanted to mention that. In your book. Yeah, I just want to mention your book again, Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. Please pick it up. Also, there was somebody, one of my people in the street were asking me about the L word, and they were wondering about the whole mafia chicks and the L word, and how was it to work with them. I mean, that was a great for your restaurant, the L word.
it was a great storyline. We were about to merge we're hoping to have gone a couple more years, because there's so many more storylines, authentic ones coming in from, you know, just the embracing of the L word and the freedom of it. We were in 20-some countries, and a lot of people loved the Kit character, because I could bring together families that had been disenfranchised because of it, who've been totally separated, and I've been getting such mail and people on the streets coming up to me saying that I was such a beacon of understanding for people to change their thinking and embrace their family members. And I think all of us who were doing that show were a part of that and have consistently brought about family and uniting and more comprehensive and comfort zones because I did not understand the lesbian community. I was completely ignorant, and I had to do the show so I could learn.
Yeah.
So I could learn about humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and which I did, and I have friends for life for that. And then, you know, in my back history with Richard Pryor, you know, I made him laugh by putting his injured horse in the backseat of my Jaguar to take to the vet.
Oh, my God, and the horse peed all over your Jaguar.
Yeah.
That was this crazy story. People, you have to pick up her book. I mean, there's just funny stories, there's sad stories, there's happy stories in the book. But the horse, again, she has a great love for horses, and, you know, the horse was ill, and it was just like whatever it took, you wanted to get this horse fixed.
The horse saved my life as a little girl.
Yes. Yes. He told me when the horse, you told me. I felt like you were reading to me when I'm reading. I felt like you were writing to me. But she rode this horse when she was a little kid. I mean, I think you must have been a dot. And if you were talking about the horse, like 8 feet tall or something.
Right.
And she, like, the people, all her family were looking for her all over the farm. Like, where in the world is she? She's sleeping on top of a horse. You know, it was just crazy.
Yes.
But I want to tell you, people, please check her out in Just Right. How was it working with Queen Latifah?
It was great. And Paula Patton, we had a great time. No, it was too short. I would have loved to have had my role more with the daughters. You know,
okay.
Of showing that, because the Paula Patton daughter was an adopted daughter from my best friend who had passed away, and Queen Latifah, her character was my character's natural child, and to see, you know, how more of our dynamic through the years, I think a couple more scenes would have given a much more comprehensive statement of what is physical beauty and the could be the shallowness of it and the intrinsic beauty of my natural daughter. And to see them, because they didn't have, I think, my mother looked stunning. My mother has on makeup and is dressed every day, even if she's mopping the floor. And especially if you have a man, I believe that I would have had my character a little bit more, into beauty and Beauty for Her Man.
Okay. Yeah.
And so you could see Paula Patton, why did she want to be so pretty? Because she wanted to be my daughter, and she was really fighting to be. There was just other levels that, you know, I can't rewrite the script. It wasn't my script. But to not focus so much on basketball, you know, it was going to be there. I just think that, you know, from a woman's point, that was really a great, strong women's movie, and they kind of missed the point for me.
I have a caller, Pam. I want to take a caller and get to the question because we have about 2 minutes left.
Good morning. Great.
Good morning. Did you have a question this morning?
Hey.
All right. Let me try another person. Good morning. Did you have a question for the guest?
Hi.
Hi. Do you have a question for Pam Greer?
Oh, I love you, Pam Greer.
Hi. Good morning.
Absolutely phenomenal. My name is Patricia Adams. Joy, I love your show. I love your guest lineup and everything.
Thank you.
I'd love to have you, Ms. Greer, on my show. I'm on the Blog Talk Radio platform, and my show is Patricia Adams Live. I don't know how to reach out to you, but I would love to.
Joy, can you give her Linda Duggan's information?
Email me, and I'll send you Linda, her PR person's information, okay, honey?
From Hachette Books, because I want to reach out. There's so much connection. This whole world, we're on a vibrational, you know, connection of moving and getting stronger and recognizing what we have not used in the last 10 years. And I think it's phenomenal. That's why I'm on tour, to reach out to everyone and enjoy this wonderful wake-up call together.
Yes. Thank you so much, Pam, for being on the show today. We only have a minute left, and I just want to say keep going. You are so beautiful, strong, and there are so many people out here love you in the chat room. They're calling you a goddess. And just much success in all your endeavors.
Well, namaste, and I love. Go on my Facebook. I have a fan and a friend sites, and all of them. I engage them and invite them to interact with each other and share each other's comments, whether it's about the book, about each other, in different parts of the country, the world, and we get stronger from that. I've learned so much from other people. Plus, I've been able to give ideas to other people regarding keeping a balance in life. For example, when the women, they decide not to have a lot of female babies, now they don't have enough women to procreate and balance their country.
Yeah, because they have mostly male children. They
exactly.
want male children.
Mm-hmm. Balance.
India. Same thing in India.
Yes, balance.
Well, namaste, Pam.
Namaste. May the power within you be strong.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You as well, Joy. We'll do it again.
Okay, we will. Definitely.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening this morning, and please stay tuned for my next show about men's health. It'll be a wonderful, definitely educational show with two wonderful doctors, one from Louisiana and one out in Cleveland. So please call in 646-929-0368 and speak with the doctors. Have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you.